We might want to know whether a particular set of predictors leads to a multiple regression model that works equally effectively for two or more different groups. While developing a multiple regression model used to select graduate students based on GRE scores, one of the faculty pointed out it might not be a good idea to use the same model to select experimental and clinical graduate students. The way to answer this question is a bit cumbersome, but can be very important. Here's what we'll do. First, we're going to split the file, just like we did when comparing simple correlations between the two groups. We're going to run the multiple regression predicting graduate GPA from the three GRE scores for each subfile. That's easy because once you split things, whatever you tell SPSS to do, it does for each subfile. Then we're going to compare how well the predictor set predicts the criterion for the two groups using the Fisher Z-test. And then we're going to compare the structure, that is the weights of the model for the two groups, using Hotelling's t-test and the Meng-Rosenthal test. So, first thing we do is split based on program. And if you go back and look, this is the same thing we did when comparing correlations. And then when we go in and do the regression, we get two sets of results. And what I've done is summarize them here. For the clinical group with 64 people, we get an R-square of almost 0.7. And for that, analytic and quantitative predict verbal doesn't. For the experimental group, we get a lower R-square, and all three predict. So we have two questions. Is this number reliably smaller than that? And is this set of weightings really going to produce different predictions than this set of weightings? Okay? And so, the first thing we do is that we can compare the two. Oh, what have I done? What have I done? We can compare the two models by plugging things right in here to Fisher Z-test, because the R from a model is the same as the simple R with the predicted value from that model. The only thing you got to remember when you do this is remember to plug in the Y, I'm sorry, you plug in the R values to compare the R square values. We tend to think in terms of R square, but this formula wants R values. So we don't put in the R squares, we put in the corresponding Rs. Yes?
So the Fishers is always when you're comparing groups and then...
This is always nested models and nothing else. This is always comparing groups and nothing else. This one is our most general that we apply to all sorts of things. And when we do that, we get a Z value of 1.52. And so it looks like this set of predictors does better for clinical than experimental, but it's not statistically significant difference. Probably in part because of small samples. And if you back up and do the power analysis on this, we had about 30-40% power. Okay, these are not really strong tests, and I'll show you how to do the power analysis. Of course I will, but not today. Now we want to compare the structure of the two models. Now what we want to do, instead of splitting the files into two groups, we only want to get the data from one group. We want to work with the larger of the two groups so that the test will have the best sensitivity. First, we want to tell SPSS to analyze data only from the experimental students, which was program equals 2. That's the one with the larger sample size. So we go into data select cases. If the condition is satisfied, click on if program equals 2. Now it's only going to give us whatever we ask for done on program equals 2. What we're then going to do is come in and do two compute statements. One is based on the clinical model, and these are those weights. The other is based on the experimental model, and that's based on these weights. And then we're going to correlate each of those predictor values with the criterion. Now we're only doing this in the larger of the two samples. one of these correlations, the direct correlation, should be the same as the multiple R from the full regression up above. Because it's the same people and the same model. So the direct, which would be the experimental model, applied on the experimental people, should give us the same R as we got up above. And if it doesn't, stop there and figure out what you've done wrong. This is right. Wouldn't be much of an example if it were wrong, but. And then we get these other two numbers that we need. This is the crossed R. This is how well the clinical model does when applied to the experimental sample. These are the two numbers that we're going to compare. But in order to compare them, we need the correlation between the two models in the group that we're doing the application in. So we take those three numbers, and we would plug them in to the Hotelling's Steiger's. And it doesn't matter which one you use as direct and which one you use as indirect. You're going to get the same value. But generally, the direct is here, the indirect is there, the correlation between the models, the number in the larger group. You get back your T and C value to make your decision. We get a T of 3.22, which tells us that the structure of these models is statistically significantly different. You can't substitute these models in the one sample because the models for the samples are different.
Does the structure consider the constant or only the B weights?
It considers the constant. You can do this, of course, you can do this without putting the constants in, but since the constants are an addition, it's a linear transformation, and it won't change the correlation between the two.
Yes, you wouldn't.
Wouldn't matter. Some people have suggested leaving them out. Can't matter. All I'm doing is adding or raising or lowering everybody's score by the same amount in the two Y primes.
Okay, but by including the constants, you couldn't screw it up.
No.
Or could you?
No. You can't screw it up either by putting them in or by leaving them out, except that if you represent that model without a constant, somebody's going to fuss and you're going to have to explain it. And you know, very often, that's how you make choices. What can I get across clearly without some people dragging this down into a battle about whether or not the constant matters? When you're presenting this comparison, make sure that you don't rush to the comparison. Make sure that you start by saying, you know, here's what we were doing, here's the variables, here's the univariate statistics, here's the correlations, here's the models in each group. Talk about what each model is. Does it work? How well does it work? Da 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 da. Lay all that out. Then get to the model comparisons. And remember that you're comparing things in two ways. One is how well the predictor set predicts, and whether the structure of the predictors are different in the two models. Okay? Take your time. It'll go fine. Let's look at criterion comparison. Like I say, this is really one of my favorites. I have solved so many problems by working this model, really working this model. Because people start wanting to compare models without paying attention to what they're modeling. It's sort of like, it's like any other form of confounding. Only now it's not causal confounding, it's predictive confounding. If you wanted to run two different groups to look at how a treatment works, and you ran one group, you ran the practice group and looked at percent correct, and you run the practice with feedback group and looked at how long it took them to do the task, you would never think to compare those two means. Right? I mean, percent correct and number of seconds to complete aren't comparable. And we never do that. But we're very comfortable asking if the relationship between some model and a criterion is the same as when we change criterion. It's not safe for means comparisons. It's not safe for modeling comparisons across criteria. So sometimes we have multiple behaviors or responses that might be used as criterion variables. When this happens, we might want to determine whether the models predict the different criterion differently. This can be a useful way of determining whether or not behaviors or responses represent the same thing. For example, we might have two different criteria by which we assess the performance of first-year graduate students, grades, and the number of presentations and/or publications they obtain or collaborate on during the first year. Are the multiple regression models for predicting these two from GRE scores the same? Well, if we use GPA as the criterion, we get an R-square of about 3.572. If we use pubs and presentations as the criterion, the R-square is bigger. But we can't directly compare these because we've got two different models and two different criteria. That's our problem. What we can ask is whether the structure of the model for predicting GPA is the same as the structure of the model for predicting pubs and presentations. When we look, we see that when predicting GPA, all three of them contribute. When we look for predicting number of pubs and presentations, only verbal has a unique contribution. Yes?
What do you mean by structure?
By structure, I mean the comparability of the Y prime based on the different sets of B weights. Does the Y prime that I get out of these three the same as the Y prime I get out of these three weights? Whenever we're talking about structure of a model, we're always talking about the regression weights. Which ones are positive, negative, big, small, things like that. So what we're going to do is, we're going to compute predicted GPA based on each model. Now, the reason I chose GPA was because that was considered the more standard criterion. So what I'm asking is if the model for predicting publications and presentations predicts GPA as well as a model designed to predict GPA. If they predict equally well, it's because the models are equivalent and they don't have a structural difference. So I've got GPA direct, and so these would be the weights from the GPA model. And I've got GPA crossed, these would be the weights from the pubs and presentations model. And then once again, I get the correlations. The R for the direct should be the same as the R for that model. We're just reproducing it. This is our crossed model, and this is the correlation between the two models. We plug these into the FCT computator, again, using the one in the middle for Hotellings and Steigers, and we get a T value of 7, a Z value of 6.33, way bigger than 1.96, and the model for predicting GPA is different than the model for predicting publications and presentations because they are not substitutable. They do not produce substitutable predictions. Yes?
Did you ever have it where the T value was below the T-critical, but the Z was above?
Hardly ever.
So they always go together?
Almost always. I mean, the difference between them is very important theoretically, but hardly ever translates into differences in results. And then again, the write-up. The thing to notice about the write-up is that we present both univariate, bivariate, and multivariate results. We talk a little bit about the models before we compare them. Okay?
So this just tells you that they're different, but not which one is the better fit. Is that right?
Well, the direct is the better fit.
I don't know.
And if you wanted to, you could go the other direction. On occasion, on rare occasions, when I'm working with a very focused criterion and a very diffuse criterion, the diffuse criterion model does better at predicting the focused criterion than the focused criterion model predicts the diffuse. Does that make sense? All right. If a model predicts IQ, it's going to do a better job of predicting grades than a grades model does of predicting IQ. You sometimes get an asymmetry. And when you get an asymmetry, the broader criterion, which has more stuff in it to predict it, crosses better to the focused criterion than vice versa. So if I'm trying to predict something really general that has a lot of pieces behind it, I usually have a bigger, fancier model. And so it does better at multiple different focused activities. I mean, maybe the neatest one of these I ever got to do is when we literally had a performance measure that had 5 parts to it. There was manager's ratings, there was regional manager's ratings, there were 3 measures of individual performance. And so what I did is I built 6 regression models. One on the aggregate that they used, and one for each separate criterion variable. And I was able to show that 2 of these had the same model as performance, and the other 3 had very different models. So at this point, they have to decide, what do you really care about? Because the way that you estimate who's going to do the performance, the aggregate well, and who's going to do 2 and 3 well agree. But how well people do at 1, 4, and 5 were 3 other models that weren't comparable. So once again, you got to tell me, what do you want me to do for you? And of course, could have anticipated all of that just by looking at your correlations among those 6. Because these 2 were very similar, and so they come together and dominate this aggregate. These others were all very different. And as you know, when you put a couple that go together and some that don't go together, the ones that go together dominate the group. Plus, it didn't help any. This one, I had an R-square of 0.001 because the standard deviation was 0.004. Okay. It was a 10-point scale, several hundred people, 2 9s, all the rest 10s. This isn't helping. But they added into that total. Make sense? So, you know, it gets messy out there.
So what do you do once you figured out whether or not they...
I sit down with them, and I get them to understand to my satisfaction what these 5 things are, and the consequences of putting them together instead of selecting among them. It goes from a discussion about statistical models to measurement. And it really turns into a discussion of what they're trying to do with their business. Which is where it gets squirrely, because I don't know squat about business. Okay? All that I can do is bring to them how they're not agreeing with themselves, so they can decide which version they prefer. And usually they do really well at that once they realize they have to. I mean, these are generally very smart people who are very good at what they do. But they don't know how to ask the right questions. And when all else fails in the real world, add shit together. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Really probably dumb question. But if I'm trying to figure out whether a model of GRA predicts predicts one of the 7 better, is it just the R-square that I'm looking at?
It is just the R-square, and all you do is compare and say, damn, we're doing better here than there.
Okay.
But because we're changing 2 things, I don't have a t-test to give you to say this is better than that. It just looks better, and that's where the argument is.
Okay.
I mean, clearly, we're doing better here than here.
Okay.
It's just, you know, if I had, let's say, it's a false analogy, but I'll tell you why it's a false analogy. If I gave the treatment to these people and looked at how long it took them to reach some criterion of better, and I gave the control to another group and assessed how sick they still were, you'd be unhappy if I compared those two means. Right? That's what we have here. The difference is that when I'm comparing means, I can cheat. If I've got a population mean and a population standard deviation, I can translate everybody into a z-score. And if I have a population mean and a standard deviation, I can translate everybody into a z-score, even if they're different criteria. I can get nearly comparable measures and do that significance test. There's no analog here. It's amazing what you can do with a mean and a standard deviation. So convert things to z-scores and increase comparability. But there's no good t-test for comparing those. There's a couple different out there, but the serious folks don't like them. The desperate folks use them.
So there isn't really a way to say, does this model predict this better or this better?
Right. Okay. Other than saying, damn, that's a bigger number than that.
Okay.
You probably said this, but I missed it. But when you're comparing the groups, the direct model is the larger sample size, right?
Right.
How do you find which do you use?
If one of these is more standard than the other, or it's a more valid index, if it's more stable in some way. Before, we could use sample size as an index of stability, and we did our comparison where it was most stable. Here, stability is usually defined by the quality of the measure. If we decided that we cared more about this than this, we would do our crossing on the GPA. If we decided we cared more about the number of pubs and presentations, or trusted it more, or maybe it's the only one that had any meaningful variability, that's where we'd do our comparison. You always want to do the comparison on the most stable set of data. Sometimes stability sample size, sometimes it's psychometric stability. Great question. And that's why some people like a double cross and other people will never do a double cross. You do it where you're going to get the most accurate result. Convergence is not running one good study and one shitty study and seeing if you get the same result. Convergence is running two good studies and seeing if you get the same result. All right, so now these two questions are really, 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 really parallel.